Good morning, everyone. It's good for Chris and I to be back. Every time we go down to Arkansas lately, we have trouble with our tires. We had to replace a third one when we were down there, and it's just weird to have those type of things happen. So we are very glad to be back. We didn't have to spend the night in the parking lot this time. But we did have to have another one repaired. Chris has pictures of Caleb. We arm wrestled, she won, she gets to show the pictures. Okay? This morning, we're going to be looking at a lesson that is drawn from Luke chapter 14, verses 7 through 11. I want to preface this lesson, though, with a little bit of a confession about where this lesson came from. At the last business meeting, we talked about striving to have a gospel meeting sometime this year, and I was tasked with looking at some people, and one of the people that I was wanting to investigate to come was a man by the name of Dave Resnick, and I found out that he has died. He was 58. He died with brain cancer, and I was not aware that he had passed away. But one of his lessons was entitled "The Best Seat in the House," and I was hoping that he would be able to present that if we were able to convince him to come and hold a meeting with us. Well, since he is no longer with us, I took a recording of his lesson and reworked it a little bit, but I want to present that this morning because I think that it's an excellent lesson, but it is not original with me. It is something I wanted to do because we lost somebody that was a very good gospel preacher. 58 was how old he was. That's just a couple years older than I am. And to go that way was rather a shocking thing to think about. So that's where this lesson comes from. I want you to be aware of that. In many ways, I'm just kind of paying homage to someone who was such a good influence. But it's called "The Best Seat in the House." It's human nature to want to sit in the best seat in the house. At sporting events, it's the skybox seat, or it's the seat on the 50-yard line, or it's the seat directly behind home plate. These places command the best view, and they also command the highest price. And they also carry the greatest bragging potential. I mean, I have bottom deck, front row seats at tonight's, Pistons game, or and people go, "Wow, how'd you get so lucky?" or something like that. And this desire for the best seat in the house shows up in a great many places. I mean, watch people in a parking lot sometime. I mean, we spent a lot of time circling in a parking lot, trying to find places to park when we were up at the hospital in Little Rock. But the best parking places are usually the ones closest to the front door. And I have seen, and you probably have too, people nearly collide competing for the one open spot near the door. The spaces way out on the other end of the parking lot are very seldom taken unless the lot is full or unless the employees are required to park in them. At a concert, the best seat in the house is probably the one closest to the musicians. Maybe an even better one might be a backstage seat where you get to meet the performers. And when you have a guest in your house and you invite them to sit down, don't you give them the best seat? And if one of your kids is sitting there, you ask them to move, or you move them into the kids' table in another room, right? Well, what do you suppose in a church building is the best seat in the house? Well, I can tell you without a doubt, after years of observation, that it's the back seat. Okay? I know that because it's the one that tends to be grabbed the first. We never have to hang, I've never seen a church have to hang reserved signs on the front pews, because the farthest seat away from the preacher is the best seat in a church building. Diplomatic negotiating teams spend hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars and many hours getting the seating just right so that visiting dignitaries are afforded proper honor by the placement of their chairs. Did you know that in the Korean War, the Korean conflict, they spent 2.5 years arguing about the seating arrangement before they ever began any negotiations. A slip in those type of things can guarantee that countries sometimes will go to war. Well, you might remember that in Mark chapter 10, two of the disciples of Jesus, James and John, came up and asked Jesus for the best seats in the kingdom of God. They said, "Grant that we may sit in your glory, one on your right side and one on your left side." They wanted the best seats in the kingdom, the places of honor, the places of prestige, because it's a natural thing for the natural man. Well, Jesus has some very specific things to say about the best seat in the house. And that's what I want us to consider in this message. Look at, and read with me again what is found in Luke chapter 14, verses 7 through 11. So he told a parable to those who were invited when he noted how they chose the best places, saying to them, "When you are invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, 'Give place to this man.' And then you begin with shame to take the lower place, or the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, go up higher.' Then you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Now let me set some things up for the incident that was described here. According to verse 1, Jesus had come by invitation to the home of one of the leaders of the Pharisees for a meal on the Sabbath day. And it's one of those dinners attended by the religious who's locally among the sect of the Pharisees. And when he arrived, he found out that one of the guests there had a condition that the Bible calls in the King James, dropsy. Now, according to Nelson's Bible Dictionary, dropsy is an abnormal accumulation of fluid in the body, body's connective tissue. It causes terrible, painful swelling in the body of the person who has it. And that's about as much as I know about it, and that's about as much as the dictionary tells me. Now, the man was probably invited by the Pharisees because the Pharisees wanted to put Jesus to the test. But Luke doesn't actually say anything about that. Over their known objections regarding healing on the Sabbath, Jesus cures the man. And though I'm sure some of them might have liked to have challenged his right to heal on the Sabbath, they all keep quiet about it, perhaps only verifying to themselves what they had already heard, that this man violates their traditions. Then as things begin to settle down and the guests make their way to the table for the meal to be served, Jesus notices that they're jockeying for position, going around the head table, the places of honor. They're quickly filling up. And probably the places of greatest honor in that day would have been those that were closest to the person who was serving as host. Jesus, ever busy explaining the Father's attitude about such things, could not let this one go by. And so he tells them the parable. Now you probably recognize with me what Jesus is teaching here is the opposite of nearly everything that our world says regarding a success. And it's not easy advice to take because according to Jesus, the best seat, number one, is in the house is the last seat. Look again at verse 10. Look at verse 10. He says, "But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place." I think it's fairly obvious that Jesus has more in mind than seating arrangements at a feast or a wedding or some sort of celebration. Luke tells us in verse 7 that this was a parable, and the lesson of the parable is contained in verse 11. Verse 11 says, "For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." If you want to force yourself into the finest seat, the first seat, the highest honorable seat, Jesus says you're going to be humbled. If you willingly take the last seat, Jesus says you will be exalted. And that goes against the grain of our culture, doesn't it? I don't know who said it, but I do remember the quote, and it's a very common quote nowadays. But I don't know who originally said it. But the quote is, "Winning isn't everything; it's the only thing." In other words, being first is so important to some that it becomes the only thing that they will settle for. Nothing else is acceptable. Everything else is disgraceful. Now, I hope you understand that such a philosophy, while it might be useful in sports, it chokes on Jesus' words here. It chokes primarily on the means, because elsewhere in Mark chapter 9, verse 35, Jesus said, "If anyone wants to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." Now, that doesn't sound like a modern day formula for success, does it? You probably won't find it listed in the 10 most important habits of successful people. You see what the difference is, though, in the means? Our sports figure says, go for first. Our Lord says, go for last. Both are telling us how to get to the top, but the difference of means is like night and day. There's a story that is told about a man named Sammy Morris, who was a Christian from Africa, who came to the United States in order to go to one of our Christian schools. Now, the road he chose for himself was a tough one, was a tough one, but he never let it stop him from making progress. When he arrived at the university that he was intending to attend, the school's principal, it was a boarding school, the school's principal asked him what room he wanted. Sammy said simply, "If there is a room nobody wants, give it to me." Later, the president commented to him, "I turned away with my eyes full of tears because I was asking myself whether I was willing to take what nobody else wanted." Jesus says, "Recline at the last place. Then when you're asked to move up, it will be an honor." The best seat in the house, according to Jesus, is the last seat. Also, he says the best seat in the house is the least desired seat. We don't find Jesus making a comment about competition for the seats with less honor associated, the ones left when they have all been picked over. This teaching really is different than the way we think of it, isn't it? Ever gone to the market? Pick up some vegetables or something, especially the produce department is where this really shows up. And you go maybe to where the tomatoes are, and you find that because maybe there's a sale or because it's late in the season or because of various conditions, that the bin there just has a few bruised, maybe sort of shriveled up hardball specimens. Obviously, the bin had already been picked over. I can guarantee what will go through most of our minds. I'm not going to eat those, and we'll leave without buying anything. That attitude might not be so bad when it comes to shopping for vegetables, but in other contexts, it amounts to arrogance. It says, "I'm too good for that." There's a story about that comes from the American Revolution, which I find absolutely fascinating. An officer in civilian clothes rode past a group of recruits busy repairing a break in a rampart. The work was really too heavy for the size of group that was working on it. And the one in charge was shouting instructions at them, but he made no attempt to help them. Asked why? By the officer that was in civilian clothes, the man said with great dignity, "Sir, I am a corporal. This is beneath me." The stranger apologized for asking, dismounted, and proceeded to help the exhausted soldiers himself. And when the job was finished, he turned to the corporal and said, "Mr. Corporal, next time you have a job like this, and you do not have enough men to do it, go to your commander-in-chief, and I will come and help you again." For the officer in plain clothes was Commander General George Washington. most of us think like the corporal. We don't want to humble ourselves. Like the guests at the wedding feast, Jesus is describing, they want to emphasize their rank over others and be noticed for it. They want to push themselves as high as they can, even if it means stepping on others to do it. It's the law of the jungle. It's survival of the fittest. It's eat or be eaten. But it's not what Jesus is teaching here. And one of the reasons we shy away from humility and don't want to take the last seat is that we fear humiliation. We're afraid they might find out what we are really like and think less of us. Remember when Ann Lander used to have a column before she passed away? This letter to Ann Lander demonstrates how fearful people are of being humiliated and embarrassed by association with common things. Here's what the letter says. Dear Ann Landers, I read an item in the Chicago Tribune recently that stunned me. It said that the most frequently shoplifted item in American drugstores is Preparation H. I never would have guessed it. We cannot admit that we have the same problems, you see, as other people. They might think less of us. Apparently, many would rather steal Preparation H than be humiliated by going through the checkout stand with such a basic item. Isn't that a great comment on human nature? Why is this lesson of Jesus so hard for us to take? I think it's hard because, number three, the best seat in the house is the learning seat. Most of us would rather take a shortcut to the top. The trouble with that is that if we do, we avoid all of life's lessons along the way. We want the graduating tassel without the necessary difficulties associated with it. The trip from the bottom through the school of hard knocks and common tasks is not something that is desired. I remember hearing of a Christian organization that always asked newly hired people to clean the toilets for 2 weeks. Doesn't matter what their qualifications are, doesn't matter what they are hired for, the first job in this organization is always cleaning the toilets for 2 weeks. If they will not do it, they will not be hired. Dave Thomas, founder of Wendy's restaurant chain, illustrates the learning value of humility in his book entitled Well Done, The Common Guy's Guide to Everyday Success. And he writes, I got my MBA long before my GED. Now, Dave never graduated from high school. He continues, I even have a photograph of me in my MBA graduation outfit, a snazzy knee-length work apron. I guarantee you that I'm the only founder among Americans' big corporations whose picture in the corporate annual report shows him wielding a mop and a plastic bucket. And it's not a gag. It's a case of leading by example. At Wendy's, MBA does not mean Master of Business Administration. It means mop bucket attitude. It's how we define satisfying the customer through cleanliness, quality food, friendly service, and atmosphere. Wouldn't that be great to have an MBA attitude in the church? Now, you don't necessarily have to wield a physical mop to show you have it. There are plenty of other things that will get you your MBA. A widow or a divorcee who has five little kids that needs someone just to sit with them and help them because they're going nuts trying to be both mom and dad. Want to get your spiritual MBA? Go over there and help them with one or two of the kids. And the idea is that that's what God would want us to do for one another. People often will say, you know, I want to do something in the church. And I admire the attitude when people say, I want to do something in the church. We need more of it. But is it necessary to come and ask permission to do something to help a fellow Christian? No. What around us needs mopping? Figure it out and then go do it if you can. And if you can't find anything, perhaps we're not looking hard enough. Sometimes it looks like there's nothing to do in the church because we only want to do things that get us recognized by others. Are we any different than those jockeying for seats in this festive occasion here? Humble yourself and you'll be exalted. Exalt yourself and you'll be humbled. So Jesus says, not only should we have the best seat in the house, but the best seat in the house, the last thing, the fourth thing, is that the best seat in the house is not the lazy seat. Whales communicate with each other. I don't know if you know that or not. They do that by a series of whistles and clicks and maybe they do it from a distance, warning people about, hey, watch out, you're going to get harpooned if you come up over here for air or whatever. But sometimes I bring that up simply because sometimes we think that the kind of attitude that Jesus is advocating is a kind of attitude that doesn't belong, just like a whale doesn't belong in our church building. It belongs out in the ocean. And we kind of think, you know, this kind of attitude doesn't seem to belong in the world. It only belongs in this, in a rarefied church atmosphere only. But in reality, Jesus is saying that we are a people called to follow Him. And Jesus, it says in Mark chapter 10, that He came to serve, not to be served. So it's not a lazy seat if we want the best seat in the house either. Fact is, the best seat in the house is the Lord's seat. Luke doesn't mention it here, but where do you suppose Jesus was sitting as He was telling this parable? I guarantee you, Jesus was not sitting in the middle of those pushing each other to get to the best seat. That wasn't His way. He was sitting in the lowest part of the seats. There is a story about a Scottish man who was a successful businessman who had one son. He was very proud of this boy, and outwardly the boy was well-mannered and well-educated and respected. At least he was until he left home. Once away from his father's guidance, he turned his back on his upbringing, and he indulged in every kind of excess that he could think of, sowing his wild oats with all the gusto that he could muster, until one day he was arrested for embezzlement. And at the trial, he was found guilty. All through the proceedings and even up through the jury foreman's reading of the verdict, the young man appeared essentially unconcerned, arrogant, and nonchalant. No one was going to humiliate him. When the verdict was brought in, the judge told the man to stand for the reading of the sentence. He arrogantly stood, still looking cocky and proud, and with a haughty glance, he looked around the courtroom, and that's when he finally saw his father, whom he hadn't seen for several years. The old man had stood and moved to the front. When the younger man looked at his father, he saw a man who had once stood with head and shoulders erect and proud. Now those same shoulders were bowed low with shame and sorrow as he stood as close as he could get to his son. Even though it were his son's sentence that was about to be read, he felt like he was responsible. And at the sight of his father's bent and humiliated form because of his own disgraceful conduct, the son finally began to weep bitterly and for the first time repented of his crime. For the Christian, that is what happens when in our arrogance and our self-importance, we suddenly get a glimpse of Jesus, the Son of God, taking the humiliation we should be feeling ourselves, taking all of that upon Himself. That picture, more than any other, lets the air out of our arrogance. Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 through 8 says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, and being made in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. When Jesus urges us to take the humble seat as the best seat in the house, we do it because it is the Lord's seat. He showed us the way by willingly heading to the bottom of society's ladder, to the place of a criminal, to a death on a cross, hanging falsely accused before all who watched, though he did nothing wrong. And he did it on our behalf. And because he humbled himself, God has now exalted him. John Brody, a former quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, was once asked why a million-dollar player like him should have to hold a ball for field goals and extra points after the touchdown. And Brody responded, "Well, if I didn't, it would fall over." Brody wouldn't take the bait. He wouldn't exalt himself, though the opportunity was obvious. Maybe that had something to do with his greatness. I don't care which image you leave with this morning, whether it's the CEO with a mop and bucket in his hand, a quarterback on his knees, hands and knees holding the ball for the kicker, the African student willing to take the room no one else wanted, or the Lord of glory himself submitting himself to cruel and vulgar men to be put to death for our redemption. Just don't be among those who fight for the first seat. Head for the best seat in the house, the seat of Christ and service, and let God move you up. This morning, let's encourage one another in our own walk with God and help each other as we strive to live this difficult life in this world. And if you're not a Christian this morning and you're ready to put Christ on in baptism, let him cleanse you of your sins and lift you up to begin walking in a new path, we encourage you to come forward while together we stand and sing.